The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Here's your money briefing for Wednesday, January 24th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. We're pivoting topics today to talk about the family bank. A financial gift from your parents could help you buy your first car or make a down payment on a house. But more often than in past years, getting some money from mom and dad is more than a one-time only occurrence.
Whereas that help was typically concentrated between the ages of 25 to 35, it's now starting when a child leaves school and then extending well into the grandchild's life.
We'll talk to Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Julia Carpenter after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
It's not unusual for parents to give their children money, but that financial relationship is lasting longer than it did in previous generations. Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Julia Carpenter joins me. Julia, earlier this month we discussed how to approach the bank of mom and dad. But why has the family bank been staying open for longer?
Life is more expensive. So whereas in the past parents might gift you $3,000 so you can buy a house, that $3,000 is now just paying your rent. It's not necessarily that parents are gifting larger amounts of money. It's that they are helping their children for longer. I was looking at some data that shows that help was typically concentrated between the ages of 25 to 35 in years past. It's now starting when a child leaves school and then extending well into the grandchild's life.
Oh, wow. And that could be potentially 30s and 40s.
Even older, 40s and 50s.
Another walk to the bank. What's the most common reason children ask their parents for financial help?
It happens around big life milestones. And it's not necessarily always the children asking. Sometimes the parents take the initiative to gift the money or to lend a helping hand ahead of time. But it's around really expensive events like weddings, buying a house, like I mentioned earlier, recovering from job loss or some other financial emergency. But also we're seeing more and more that people will help once a grandchild comes along, paying for the grandchild's school, paying for daycare, these other things that make that much more expensive.
And all of this is done with good intentions, I'm sure. But what mistakes do parents often make when their children ask them for money?
I spoke with a financial advisor who said that too often she sees parents not consider the financial effects that they will face, sacrificing on behalf of their children or making a mistake and pulling from their retirement or pulling from another bucket of money that's really crucial for the parents and their financial security. Also, though, the same financial advisor mentioned that too often the children accept the money or the parents give the money without thinking about the long-term effects it could have on their relationship. The problem with these financial transfers is that they can lend a transactional nature to the relationship. So I'm thinking about a parent who gives a certain amount of money to their adult child, and the implication is, okay, you're going to visit me more, right? Or as this financial advisor was telling me, you're going to take care of me when I'm old, right? I'm giving you this money. I'm sacrificing my current financial security. That means that's now on you and you're responsible for my later financial security.
You know, nobody's perfect. So how about the children? What mistakes are they making?
One of the things children can do is begin to count on that money. Your parents gift you an amount of money every few years once you're out of school. And then one year that money doesn't come. oh no, you've built your entire budget around receiving that money. What's going to happen then? The other thing that could happen is that they resent it because it feels transactional, or because it feels the parents are giving them this money in order to reach certain milestones. This is for you guys to get married. Well, we don't want to get married. This is for you to buy a house. All right, I don't want to buy a house. These different things that were important to the parents that the money is sort of communicating, hey, this should be important to you too.
So maybe draw up a set of rules.
Draw up a set of rules, but also feel free to talk about that amount of money instead of it just landing your account, or, you know, talking about it briefly and then it ending. Talk about, hey, when you gifted me this amount of money, it was really important because I could reach this. My goal is to now do this. Or the parent saying, we're giving you this amount of money. It is only for the grandchild to go to the private school, or it is only so that they can go to this camp. Giving rules, but also just talking about it more and talking about how it makes you both feel.
And what if this financial help is a decent chunk of change? Are there any tax rules that families need to be aware of?
So it depends on if it's a loan or if it's a gift. That's where we need to be clear. If there is a loan, that comes with its own set of tax implications and rules. If it is a gift, that comes with another. So if you're giving a loan, there has to be a 3% interest rate minimum. That's the agreement between a parent and a child. So you're already agreeing that there's going to be that structure to the loan. If you're giving an amount of money, so a parent gifting this to a child, they can gift up to $18,000 without there being extra tax implications on top of that.
What's the broader socioeconomic picture here? If wealthier families are able to give their children large amounts of money to give them a head start on a house or private school for their kids?
It stands to widen the wealth gap even further, and it's already happening. You're already seeing if certain people can't reach a milestone and their parents assist them, that puts the pressure on other parents to do the same. And in the research that I'm including in the article from Martha Ripple, she mentions that lower-income families are still doing this. They're giving money. You know, they're not trying to help their children. But if wealthy families are giving money to their children and then lower income families are doing the same, it just perpetuates the same cycle we're in. I interviewed a couple, their names are Cammie and Adam, and they received money from Cammie's mom in order to put down a down payment on their apartment. And it's really interesting talking to them because Adam grew up in Texas, Cammie and her mom were both born in Bulgaria and then immigrated to the United States. And the attitude that Cammie's mom had was, why would I not help you with this? Apartments are expensive. This is an investment in your future. I have the resources. Let me help you. And the way Adam grew up, he grew up in Texas, you know, this like culture of rugged individualism in America. And at first he sort of balked at that. He said, no, we can't accept it. We can't accept it. And Cammie said, she's offering. She has described how she could do this. She's described how it would benefit our life, also the life of our son, also her life, and knowing that we are secure and set up, this is important for us to accept this. And she mentions how that cultural difference was something that they had to talk about, and the mother-in-law talked about it with Adam as well. But now they're in an apartment. They feel much more secure. Their son, they see it as an investment in him and his life. And it was interesting to talk to them about what that conversation was like and how they agreed to accept that money.
So some cultures recognize the strings attached, and some cultures are okay with that.
The saying that she mentioned really stuck with me. It's a Bulgarian saying, and it means money is earned, health isn't. There are certain things you can't predict, like health. They can count on earning this from the trust that they have agreed upon with her mother and Adam with his mother-in-law, but that there's so much in life that's unpredictable, they can count on this.
That's WSJ reporter Julia Carpenter. And that's it for your Money Briefing. This episode was produced by Ariana Osperu, with supervising producer Melanie Roy and deputy editor Chris Zinsley. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/ITheroes.